brought to you by the National Society of Genetic Counselors. This is Genetic Counselors and You. Answers to your genetic questions by genetic counselors. For more information about genetic counselors, including what they do and why you might see one, visit aboutgeneticcounselors.com.
Today's episode of the Genetic Counselors and You podcast series is sponsored by PerkinElmer. PerkinElmer Genomics is a market leader in whole genome sequencing. From India to Atlanta, Malaysia to Sweden, PerkinElmer Genomics established its global laboratory network to increase accessibility and overcome disparities in genetic testing. PerkinElmer Genomics is committed to diversity both in the population that they serve and in their global workforce. Visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com to find out more about their testing options. That's PerkinElmerGenomics.com.
We have to get over this idea that underrepresented and underserved populations are not interested in participating in research. Basically, we have to stop conducting convenient science.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our next episode of the Genetic Counselors and You podcast. To say the coronavirus pandemic is impacting all of us is an understatement, but it's also exposing disparities and social inequities embedded within healthcare. For some of us, it's the first time we've talked about social justice or systemic racism. For others, we felt their effects for some time. But did you know that racial and social inequities also exist in genetic testing? In this episode, we talk with a scientist, who's also a genetic counselor, about systemic racism and other health disparities rooted within the genetic testing experience. We aim to shine light on these issues and call out ways that genetic testing developers, marketers, and medical professionals can work to dismantle these inequities. So today we're talking with Dr. Altaviz Ewing, Senior Science Leader at Genentech. She's also an incoming Director at Large on the Board of Directors for the National Society of Genetic Counselors. Altaviz is a genomic health equity scientist and genetic counselor. Her work focuses on centering the experiences of diverse groups in genetics, genomics, and biobanking research, including addressing ethical, legal, and social implications. Welcome, Altaviz, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, DT. I'm really excited to be here today.
I am thrilled to be able to talk with you for a number of reasons, but I mean, you have such a rich background with your training in genetics, genetic counseling, health disparities, and just your life experience. What is it that actually made you want to pursue, you know, your current work right now?
Yeah, had you asked me 13 years ago if I would have imagined myself in a role such as this, the answer would have been no, because at that time, this role did not exist. So I would say I've always been driven, I've always been centered on health equity, eliminating health disparities, and making sure the voices and the needs of underrepresented and underserved populations were a primary focus or were not forgotten. So I really think my role at Genentech as a health equity scientist is a phenomenal marriage of that passion for genetics, advancing inclusive research, and really advocating for underrepresented and underserved populations. It's landed me in this phenomenal role, and I could not have asked to be in a better place.
Like, how wonderful that you can combine those things into your actual job.
Yep, absolutely. And it wasn't easy getting here, for sure. I can recall throughout my journey, there were definitely moments where I felt discouraged, where I was even dissuaded from pursuing health equity and health disparities work. But I always felt like it was the right thing to do. And even though neatly created positions were not available at the time, I always felt as though if I followed my passion and if I continued to do the right thing, then doors would open and those opportunities to be of greater service would definitely ensue.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, being part of an underrepresented group in the field of genetic counseling, I can say, you know, I'm guessing that that was a big factor for you, having lived that experience yourself. And that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to talk about today in the context of genetic testing. So, you know, there's the underrepresented groups within our field, which are, you know, you could certainly speak to those, but then there's the underrepresented groups that are actually representative of the genetic testing experience. Do you see those as kind of related to each other?
I would say they're absolutely related. Even when I reflect on what motivated me to become a genetic counselor, I recall sitting in my senior genetics course, my senior year of college, and just really going over some of the advancements as it pertains to the sequencing of the human genome, and also learning every single day about some of the disparities that existed between Black and white women in terms of health outcomes as it pertains to breast cancer. And I really saw genetic counseling and genetic testing as a tool to really help level the playing field in terms of affording equitable health outcomes for all women, regardless of race. For me, it was really that love for family health history, and being able to talk about your family health history as well as your family history, and being able to bring that into a setting where you could talk to a healthcare provider, such as a genetic counselor, to determine if one was eligible or an appropriate candidate for genetic testing. And then if so, I really saw it as an opportunity for individuals to make informed decisions and to potentially access information that could help them navigate their medical management to help reduce their risk or even prevent the occurrence of a subsequent cancer if they already had a diagnosis. So I would definitely say being from an underrepresented population myself and just knowing how those cancer health disparities hit home, how when I saw commercials or I read an article, I always saw myself because the articles or the commercials were oftentimes about young women with breast cancer. And even though I have never been diagnosed with cancer, I was just always devastated that it oftentimes disproportionately impacted women who were young, and that same group of women oftentimes experience worse health outcomes. When we think about genetic testing today and we think about who accesses the service and the tool, we do still see a disparity or a difference between certain groups that do access and certain groups that are not accessing the service for various reasons. Those reasons could be due to the lack of knowledge or awareness about the services. And then oftentimes it comes down to some of the healthcare biases that exist as well, where certain groups are not even referred for genetic counseling and genetic testing.
Right. I just kind of want to take it back a little bit to when you first talked about some of the disparities that you noticed specifically if we just talk about, you know, women with breast cancer. And that's actually something I don't think people realize, and certainly not when it comes to genetic testing, that perhaps there might be disparities in that as well. So, you know, whether that be the testing that is something that your healthcare provider is offering to you, or maybe testing that you're considering doing at home, there's inherent disparities and some systems of racism built into that genetic testing. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, if you just use the example of breast cancer, if that's something that you had noticed even earlier in your experience as a genetic counselor, or when you made the move to industry and began working in the genetic testing space.
Indeed. And I can even take it back so far as to my genetic counseling training. So during my cancer rotations, I made the observation that there were a number of young women who were diagnosed with breast cancer who met with us as genetic counselors, but unfortunately they could not share sufficient information about their family health history.
Why wouldn't they be able to do that?
So unfortunately, there are occasions where someone may not be connected to both sides of their family. So they may know more information about their maternal side of the family, but they may not know as much about the paternal side of the family, or vice versa. And unfortunately, during that time, some of the women did not have information on both sides of the family, and there just was not sufficient information to qualify them for genetic testing at the time. And I just remember being so disturbed by that because, again, I looked at a number of these women and I saw myself, and I saw that they were being devastated by a disease, that they were not eligible to access a resource that could have helped them tap into what was really precision and personalized medicine at the time, and medical management that would have really personalized their screening regimens or even offered a particular type of surgery to them based on the genetic information that we could have gleaned. And in that moment, I went to the director of my program and I shared with him my observations, and I shared how I thought this was contributing to the disparities, the chasm that we see between white population and the Black population as it pertains to breast cancer and cancer health outcomes in general. And I told my director that I wanted to be part of the solution, mm-hmm. that I wanted to help tackle cancer health disparities, that I wanted to really evaluate the problem to see if I could pose solutions to help eliminate those disparities. And that happened during my cancer rotation as a genetic counselor. And in that moment, I knew that I wanted to be part of that scientific force that was really championing health equity and health disparities at that time.
Actively working towards the solution.
Absolutely. And then also ensuring that those individuals who were represented in the science were also those individuals who were going to be impacted in the clinic. Because the other thing that I observed during that cancer rotation is that a number of women from underrepresented and minority populations who actually underwent genetic testing at the time oftentimes received an inconclusive result. So it may have been a result that was not as informative as it may have been for a woman who identified as European descent or as white. So that was more so a function of our limited knowledge of how genetics really impacted disease in various underrepresented and underserved populations. And that's where I really wanted to highlight and better understand what are some of the barriers that minority populations experience when it comes to getting involved in research, and what are some of those motivators that encourage them to get involved in research so that ultimately we could optimize the utility of the advancements of the tests that are generated so that they could be equitably beneficial for them as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you were talking about how, the underrepresented groups that would go through genetic testing had a higher, experience receiving these variant results. So just for the audience, mm-hmm. like a variant of uncertain significance means there's a change that's been found in the gene, but we don't know the meaning of it yet. And that's just our limitation of our scientific knowledge. And so when you say that, I wonder if people even really know that so much of the testing that we have is, you know, when we try to compare it against what we understand to be quote unquote normal, that's often built off large populations of often Caucasian, white, mm-hmm. European background individuals. And that's just depends on the disease that we're talking about. But I don't think people who have genetic testing always realize that your result may come back and it may be a bit more limited for people of your ethnic group simply because of our scientific knowledge. And I don't know how much that's really changed over the years.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it hasn't advanced at the same rate that the availability of tests have. And it has to change. It's really unacceptable at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's going to require an active effort of team science. Mm-hmm. We really know how when we collaborate and when we really buckle down, we know the amazing advancements and achievements that can ensue. And unfortunately, that same effort has not been applied when it comes to ensuring that genetic testing offers equitable benefit for all populations. Right. However, I do remain hopeful. I think it's just going to require us as a scientific community to get comfortable being uncomfortable, but at the same time to do something that we're very familiar with in terms of being innovative and thinking outside of the box and working together. Because various populations, underserved, underrepresented populations, deserve to benefit just as much as the majority population from these tools and resources. And it is going to require us to oftentimes put our personal benefit aside, put our respective company benefit aside, and really do what's best by these populations, because these are populations that have been disproportionately impacted for decades and centuries in some cases. So we're at a point where we know that if we work together, we can make some significant contributions and some substantial progress, and it's really time for us to do so. I think we really owe that to our patients, owe that to the various populations and communities.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's kind of a couple of prongs here. One is the fact that the testing, let's just say it's not as good for certain ethnic groups as it is for others. So that needs to change for sure. And that's only going to happen with advancing scientific knowledge and priorities, like you were saying, to shift such that we actively put those higher up. And they're harder to get to. And I think that's why they're easier to ignore. You know what I mean?
Right. They're
less common right now, but that will change as we learn about them and understand them. That's one part. And then the other part is we have these very strict criteria for testing in some cases that repeatedly keep certain populations out of that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were talking about, I think, when you go back and think about your genetic counseling training rotations. Even back then, it was like, well, if you have X, Y, and Z, then you can get this test. I think that's shifting a little bit now, but it's not great.
Yeah, we definitely still have a long ways to go. But I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that basically we have to stop conducting convenient science. So we have to stop conducting science with those populations who always self-refer. There are scientists, there are pioneers out there who have been working with underrepresented and underserved populations for decades, and they've done so successfully. And I think that they have done a phenomenal job of really generating some of those best practices and strategies in terms of successfully, ethically, and respectfully engaging underrepresented and underserved populations. So it can be done. We just have to go to those experts and partner with them in order to do it in a manner that it translates into the genetic space as well. And the other thing is we have to get over this idea that underrepresented and underserved populations are not interested in participating in research.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a trainee at Howard University, the vast majority of people who engaged in research were overwhelmingly interested, and oftentimes because they wanted to do something that would help their family members in the future. You know, they don't want to see people going through the same type of experience as they've endured. So that interest is there. We have just got to find a way as a scientific and a clinical community to tap into that interest and to do so in a way that we are proving to our patients that we are trustworthy and we are truly there to be of service to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I like what you said about, you know, stopping the practice of conducting science that's convenient, because I do think it is built upon, as we've had, you know, so many of these conversations more recently, thanks to the pandemic that we're in, to do with racial justice and systemic racism. This is no different from those, which is we're just needing to change the things that we focus on because they've always been that way. And that's going to take some work and that's going to take some discomfort. But it's not until that happens that we all begin to kind of gain from that.
Absolutely. And it's going to require that we implement equity and that we take an equitable approach in everything that we do. So even when it comes to reaching certain populations or ensuring that they're able to access genetic counseling and genetic testing as resources and even participating in research, we do not take a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to genetic counseling, and we cannot take that one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to engaging groups in research or ensuring that groups benefit or even really understand the science and the technologies that are driving the field.
Yeah. The aspect of, I guess, you know, what folks might be listening to this episode is how this impacts genetic testing. And that could be a part of a research program or participation in research. It could be a part of a genetic counseling encounter. When you decided to make a move into industry after working in the clinic, and I think you did that a couple of years ago in 2018, did you notice and see some health disparities there and kernels of systemic racism or flat out in terms of the testing itself or how it was marketed perhaps to different people?
Yes, so I definitely saw disparities and differences upon walking through the door. And that was actually something that I was very cognizant of once I accepted the role. When I saw the commercials or even read about the product, it didn't always resonate with me, or I didn't always see myself, or I questioned, how will this really benefit my family? And I'm very grateful that the company I worked for was receptive to that. Mm-hmm. And although it took some time, I can say that gradually I made progress in terms of helping individuals to maybe see a different side of the story, or maybe to take into consideration a different angle or how a particular report may be perceived by an underrepresented group or an underserved group. And even just acknowledging how by continuing the practice of availing reports to individuals of European ancestry and not always taking an equitable approach to avail tests or results for groups that are disproportionately impacted by a particular disease, how unfortunately, although we may not want to admit it, that may be us contributing to the problem as opposed to helping to pose solutions. But as I mentioned, it was something that I was very cognizant of day one, walking through the door. And it was something that I was able to champion and something that the company was very receptive to in terms of connecting with experts who worked with various groups that were underrepresented in the genetic testing and genetics research space, or even attending various events where we could better connect with various groups. So those are definitely some of the steps that we took on top of being involved in various podcasts that would reach audiences of underserved and underrepresented populations. So we really tried our best to take a more active and responsible approach in reaching underserved and underrepresented groups. And although the genetics field in general has a long ways to go, I can say that those small steps were additive. And I think it's something that the company continues to this day. I actually had a chance to see that a paper was published recently that focuses on racial and ethnic differences as it pertains to COVID-19. So it definitely leaves a warm feeling in my heart to know that some of those efforts that I started championing back in 2018 remain with the company today. And that the company realizes that team science is the best approach in terms of helping to drive health equity and advance inclusive research.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've just given a couple of examples of how those of us in the majority can kind of work toward dismantling the disparities and really habits. It's truly like laziness. Honestly, I think it is. I'm just going to call it out because I think it's just doing what's easy. It's doing what's comfortable. So it's kind of like forcing yourself to think differently, listen to different people, engage with different groups that you maybe don't have a lot in common with at first glance. And building those relationships is kind of the only way you're going to be able to build the trust, which you also referred to as kind of a vital component. If you don't have that, you can't really build anything on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would definitely agree with you that, you know, it's a sense of laziness. And unfortunately, I would say there's a sense of fear behind it as well, because I think it's a new way of thinking. It's a new way of acting. And unfortunately, there is not a playbook that one can put in someone's hand and they can follow that from beginning to end and be guaranteed a successful outcome. It is going to require, again, true partnership, collaboration, and you may encounter some hiccups along the way, but just the science is very iterative and we learn from our mistakes or we continue to build upon the progress that we've made. We have to take the same approach when it comes to ensuring that we are being more inclusive of underrepresented and underserved populations. Because again, like the science depends on it, health equity depends on it, and quality of life for all populations depends on it as well. So it's a sense of responsibility that we have to own and we have to walk into. And it's one that can be achieved. We can definitely get it done. And I look forward to the day where health equity, where it's no longer a specialty. It's not anything that we have to focus on because it's the norm. It's naturally ingrained into everything that we do.
Right. It's just infused into it because we've thought it through. And also kind of what you talk about the fear there, I think it's the fear of making a mistake as well. And sometimes that means the profits are on the line if you make a mistake. Or revenues on the line. And so when you think about it from the perspective of a business, you feel like you're taking a risk. And if you're going into uncharted territory, that can be scary.
Absolutely. But I really think that's where, as companies, especially when it comes to science and medical advancements, we have to think with ethics in mind. as opposed to thinking with that bottom line in mind, because people's lives are at stake, populations' lives are at stake, and they've been at stake for decades, for centuries, and we know how to do the right thing. It's just time for us to really step into it and own it.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get into a few concrete sort of takeaways here. What are some things that folks who are listening, who are perhaps thinking about genetic testing or they're already in the middle of it, what should they be aware of, you know, in terms of their overall experience? Like maybe this could be in terms of the results that they might receive and some caveats or limitations of those that unfortunately still exist. You know, what are some things that they could be thinking of?
Yeah. So one thing that individuals can be cognizant of is if you know anything about your ancestral background and your ethnicity, that information can help determine the types of tests that you're able to access. It can help your healthcare provider select a test that is more specific to the needs of your ancestral and ethnic makeup, because not all tests are created equal.
Right.
And again, some of them are a bit more specific than others, but the more information that you're able to provide on the front end, whether it's about your ancestry, your ethnicity, but also your family health history in general, that's really going to be key in the type of test you may be able to access and even the probability that you'll be able to receive a result that will be clinically informative, and one that will help your provider determine the best course of treatment or best course of strategy for you to help manage your medical care.
I mean, that's true for just about anybody, but I can see how it would be vital for the underrepresented populations.
And the other thing that I would encourage individuals as they're pursuing genetic testing and genetic counseling is to really understand that genetic counseling is a non-directive profession. So we are never going into the conversation determined to tell you what to do. We are there to partner with you to help you make the best decision so that you are informed in the decisions that you take and the potential outcomes that you can pursue. And I say that because I want people to be encouraged to talk to their healthcare provider. So do not be timid. Do not be afraid to share any health information that you may have about yourself or about your family health history, because the more information that's discussed, the more that experience will be tailored to meet your needs. And I think oftentimes underrepresented and underserved populations may not always engage in transparent conversations around health history or even family health history. But that really could be the difference between whether or not one is eligible to pursue a test. They could also determine if someone accesses screening earlier than recommended for the general population and the frequency by which someone undergoes screening as well. So all of that is critically important information to really ensure that we're able to offer personalized and precision healthcare in a way that's equitable for all populations.
Yeah, that's great. And I would add too, because so many of those folks, I think this is, I don't know if it's more common in underrepresented groups or not, but maybe there is like half the family tree that they're not aware of. What you were mentioning, where they may just not know one side as well as the other, like that's still important gaps of information. And so, you know, tell your healthcare provider about what you know, but don't feel bad if you don't know everything, because right. Nobody does.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And even that information that we thought was useful in the past, we're finding out that maybe we need even more information on top of that. Or maybe we're finding out that some of that information wasn't as useful as we thought it was in the past. So yeah, do not be afraid. Do not be ashamed if you do not know your comprehensive family health history. The key is to have that conversation. And, you know, and that conversation can be ongoing. You may start the conversation with your healthcare provider today, and you may need a couple of days or some time to talk to family members, and you can always bring that information back to that provider. So don't feel like you have to have it in that one setting.
Yeah, you might need to talk to your aunties and your uncles and whatever you need to do that you are in touch with and that you feel comfortable discussing this kind of information with. If we then switch over to maybe thinking about the perspective of someone who's a genetic test developer, marketer, medical professional, as they're thinking about framing genetic testing for underrepresented groups, do you think there's something that they can do to begin to shift their minds on how to approach this?
Yeah, so I would say As healthcare providers, it's very important for us to be aware of our own biases that we bring to the table. I think that that's where it has to start. Just as we are required to undergo annual continuing education courses, I think that the responsibility really falls on us, and really our professional society should hold us accountable to make sure that we're checking our unconscious and conscious biases as well, because ultimately that's going to impact our patients at the end of the day. And it's also going to impact the way that we interact with our healthcare professionals. And whether we realize it or not, patients can sense if you are uncomfortable with them based on maybe their socioeconomic status or their ethnicity or cultural practices or habits. And unfortunately, that can also hinder a patient's ability to open up to a healthcare provider and to even trust a healthcare provider. So I think it's very important for us to be aware of those biases and to constantly challenge ourselves, you know, and check ourselves and have difficult conversations with friends, with colleagues, and with people that you may not interact with on a day-to-day basis, because this is going to help us all be better providers so that we can meet the needs of all of our patients, all of our populations. But the other thing is that people should understand that you don't have to do this alone. Although our profession is predominantly white, there are a number of us from underrepresented and underserved populations who have been on the ground with underrepresented and underserved populations. And we've been able to help develop some of those best practices and strategies, as well as toolkits to help us better engage underrepresented and underserved populations. So talk to us. We're more than willing to help share that information, because we can all learn from each other when it comes to this profession. This is a problem that we all have to address and we all have to work together to solve. And it's not something that people wish to keep secret. And again, in order for us to really come up with solutions that will truly make a difference, we're going to have to all work together to get it done. But I would definitely say being aware of our biases, checking our biases, and then partnering with our colleagues who come from different populations as ourselves, or who may work with different populations that we work with day in and day out. That's going to enhance our ability to better connect with more patients.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
this has been a fantastic conversation. I feel like we could just keep going and going, but did you want to share with folks how they might be able to reach you if they wanted to connect with you on social media?
Yes, absolutely. Whenever I do have free time, I always love connecting with people. You can find me at Altavis Ewing on LinkedIn. On Facebook, I'm Altavis Ewing there as well. Twitter, my handle is at AltoVisE. And then on Instagram, I am the_social_scientist.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all this great insight. And I hope that we can all work together to make science less convenient.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the opportunity, DT, and for focusing on such an important topic. Like I said, I'm very hopeful and optimistic that the changes that we've been desiring for some time, that they are definitely going to manifest within the near future. I feel like more scientists and more clinicians are putting ethics first. And I feel like our patients are only going to benefit and are only going to see some of the tremendous advancements manifest in their life more immediately as a result. So thank you. It all starts with these conversations. It all starts with disseminating this information. So I'm very grateful.
I just wanted to recognize three podcasts that have kind of delved into not this exact same topic, but topics that are somewhat related. One of those is the NSGC podcast series for its August episode, which talked about diversity and inclusion in genetic counseling. The Genotype podcast from Gray Genetics, which in its September 3rd episode features talking to a genetic counselor on her experience of being Black in the field. And the Beagle Has Landed podcast with genetic counselor Laura Hercher. The July 6th episode is discussing racism and genetic counseling with two genetic counselors. So there's lots of great stuff out there as well. This podcast is produced by the National Society of Genetic Counselors. Subscribe to Genetic Counselors and You on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a couple of minutes, complete our short listener survey by following the link in our show notes. You can also offer us a review on iTunes or Google Play.
The content of this episode is developed by NSGC and produced independently from the sponsor. The sponsor commercial does not reflect their opinions of NSGC and does not constitute endorsement or recommendation by NSGC. While we make every effort to provide accurate and reliable information, NSGC does not control or guarantee the accuracy, completeness, or efficacy of information provided by any advertiser or sponsor.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Genetic Counselors and You. For more information about Genetic Counselors and to access tools and resources mentioned in this episode, visit aboutgeneticcounselors.com.